Welcome to our 13th episode of Yelling About Comics. I'm so excited for this one. Mostly because I got the chance to make a delightful gag in the title by calling it Victoria's Secret Wars. By the title, you can probably guess that since last time we talked about going on DC Rebirth Control, we figured it was only fair that we talk about Marvel. And it seemed particularly poignant to talk about Marvel this evening because Marvel's come under fire a little bit recently for making the bold claim that the reason their comics aren't selling very well right now is that they have too many female characters and too much diversity. Now, to be fair, that quote was taken out of context. I know, shocking. The actual quote was that he said that that's what they're hearing. They don't know if they believe that that's true or not, but that's what they're hearing from their fans. So this evening, my lovely co-host, Carrie Honey.
Yay, Marvel.
Yay. We are going to be talking about why we think maybe Marvel isn't doing as well as they want to be doing. It's very easy, I think, to say, oh, it's because we have too many female, we have too many diverse characters. But in some ways, it kind of pissed me off when I read that, because that might be some of the angry Twitter feedback they're getting. But first off, take that with a grain of salt. And second off, I feel like it really sells your fan base short. Because you're kind of saying, like, oh, yeah, you know those MRA neckbeards that everybody thinks comic book fans are? Oh, God, man, that's totally what our fan base is. Don't they suck? Like, what? I don't know. I felt like it was kind of selling it short. But Carrie and I have a theory. Well, maybe. About why we think Marvel isn't doing so well. Carrie.
Well, so last week, I even wrote a column about this on Monday. So last week, all of the X-Men series have ended. Uncanny X-Men ended with Magneto almost bleeding out. The all-new X-Men ended with a dance party.
And extraordinary. Because why not?
And Extraordinary X-Men, they're teenagers, come on. Extraordinary X-Men ended with a baseball game. And really, I don't understand why they ended. And the thing is that these series are not that old. All of them started in 2015. And the series right. before that was from 2012 to 2015. So we're talking about a 2 to 3 year cycle on this stuff. And then what they do is they reshuffle them all and put them into new series. And so we're about to have X-Men Gold, which is going to be like your classic X-Men led by Kitty Pryde. And then you're going to have X-Men Blue, which is the original young X-Men led by Jean Grey. And then you're going to have all these other series that are going on. And, you know, one commenter put on Facebook, they're like, well, I'm really excited about X-Men Gold because that brings back a lot of the iconic X-Men that we love. And I totally get that. I'm kind of excited about that too. It's like, you know, X-Men Redux, but without Jean Grey. It's fantastic.
What more could you ask for?
Right? And no Wolverine. I mean, this is awesome.
Everything's coming up Milhouse.
Exactly. But my problem is that I can't take this constant reshuffling of every few years. You know, the original Uncanny X-Men started back in 1963, and I forget when it ended, because then it went on like a two-year hiatus before the Uncanny X-Men started again in 2015. You know, of course, in that time, they had other X-Men comics, which I never liked that. It's too much. It gets confusing, and then they cross over, and stories bleed, and then they reference things in other comics, and that was always a pain in the ass, and that's where I have to give 1 point to DC, because they've never really done that. You know, they have Batman.
Well, right now they have Batman. They have
okay, but that's Rebirth.
Oh, okay.
Rebirth has fucked up everything.
Okay, I was gonna say Detective Comics is definitely a thing. Anyways,
right. Well, yeah, and you know, if you look at Superman, there's all those, you know, there's Action Comics, and then there's Superman and mm-hmm. all new Superman and. Whatever. But, you know, for the most part, I think it's really just Superman and Batman on DC that they kind of go ape shit with. But, like, you know, The Flash, there's just The Flash. Maybe there's, like, 10 Flashes in the comic, but there's just one
Flash. Right.
There's just one Flash comic series. And it's just... I think one reason why they do that is to, I guess, encourage more readers that, yes, you don't have to read 1963 backlog.
Right.
And I totally get that, except that they do reference things that happened back in 1963.
Right.
But at the same time, it's frustrating that just when you feel like a comic is getting into a good groove, like I really feel that Uncanny X-Men and Extraordinary X-Men had, but now it's all been just, you know, toss papers up in the air, we're just going to reshuffle and...
Right.
Well,
I think, so one of the things that I had read, and we've kind of touched on that now, one of the things we read actually over on CBR, they had said that between October 2015 and February 2017, Marvel launched or relaunched at least 104 ongoing superhero series. For those people doing math at home in your head, because you're a mathy person, that averages to about 6 new number ones each month. And of those, roughly a quarter of those were canceled within 10 or fewer issues. So we've kind of joked on this podcast often, as a matter of fact, that Marvel and DC too, but we're talking about Marvel this evening, so that Marvel's really just kind of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And what that means is that you end up having, and you guys, god damn it, you and Larry make fun of me so much because you're like, oh, your series don't last long enough. And yet, like, all of these series, they get to maybe about the mid-20s, early 30 issues, and then they're like, okay, we're done. See you next time in X-Men Rebirth Superclocked Turbo 2X2 Special Edition.
Let's see, now, like, if Larry was here, though, he'd immediately say that the thing is, he doesn't read Marvel, and so he would just pin it all on me for that.
DC is also guilty of that, but that's a conversation for another time, and I can prove that shit. But, yeah, it's... So, part of me wonders if... I think, like, it's easy to say, oh, it's because we have so many female characters. Well, okay, or is it because you're constantly rebooting and relaunching series now with a female character, but it only lasts for like 20 issues, and then, okay, that one's done now. Now come watch The Uncanny, or when The Uncanny finishes, okay, now come watch The Amazing. Like, they just keep rebooting these series, and they keep changing authors, and they keep changing gears, and a lot of times the series would be like, oh yeah, remember those things that happened last comic? Okay, moving on, we're now in a totally different place. And it makes it really hard as a fan to follow series. Like, on one hand, I get what you're saying, that if you jumped into, like, I mean, when I was a kid in the late 80s, when I jumped into X-Men, I think I was reading, like, issues that were in the 200th, right? It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it also could have been, because I was a kid and I didn't really understand what was going on anyways, but it also kind of, like, there was this badge of honor, right? Like, after you've been reading for 5 or 6 years, like, oh, yeah, I've been reading this series for just years. And now it's more of, well, I've been reading this franchise for years, right? Oh, I've been reading the Ms. Marvel franchise. That's not even a good example. I've been reading X-Men various franchises, right, for this long. And it starts to get, it gets hard when you're, it's hard to build a loyal fan base.
Well, and especially when, okay, so you said Ms. Marvel. Let's go to Captain Marvel here for a minute. So,
oh boy.
You know, it's one thing to take these teams and, like, let's reshuffle and then pour them out in the drinks and let's see, you know, where they go. But in addition, you're also doing reboots for solo series that already exist. In the case of Captain Marvel. Like, I had bought, I think it was on sale, so I bought, like, the first 6 or 9 issues, and I was going to read them, see if I wanted to get in Captain Marvel or not, and move on. And then I happened to look on Comixology when we were discussing all this, because I was looking up, like, did X-Men really end? What's going on? And I saw that Captain Marvel also rebooted in 2016. It's the same Carol Danvers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... Well, we got to start a brand new series after the Civil War. No? No, you don't.
Well, that's the other thing, too, that, oh, God, and this is one of the reasons that, this is, I know we've mentioned this several times, but this is one of the reasons that I walked away from Marvel and DC, largely, is that, especially, God, especially with Marvel, with the Secret Wars, Civil War II, Secret Wars, and now I think the next one's going to be called Secret Empire.
Yeah, it's which... about with Captain America, what he's Steve Rogers, I should say, what Steve Rogers mm-hmm. has been doing with Hydra.
Right. But like the problem is that it becomes really difficult to read one series. You need to start reading multiple series if you want to have the full story and you really want to know what's going on, because a lot of times, and I think I've mentioned this, we've run into this a couple times, especially during the Civil War II era with Ms. Marvel, just reading Ms. Marvel, that she'd be doing one thing and then all of a sudden another issue she was pissed off at somebody and something terrible happened. But, you know, they don't go into the details because they just say, ooh, look for it in this series. No, I'm not doing it. It's become, I feel like right now, and this is, look, this has always been a thing, right? Since the 80s, since the 90s, they've always mm-hmm. been doing crossovers, but it feels so much more blatant now. Like, in the past, I felt, and again, maybe it was because I was just younger, I felt as though they would say, like, oh, see this issue, number 6. No, I will not. But now it's almost like, no, you have to. You really have right. to. You need to be reading this series.
I was like, I remember the first time I ever came across it, because like I've said before, I didn't get into comics until the mid-late 90s. The first time I came across it was when I was getting back issues of X-Men, not Uncanny X-Men, but the X-Men that was rebooted in 1993-94. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, I started collecting those, and I got to Strife's Song, which is, I think, a possible son of, again, Scott and Jean Grey that's come back from the past, and he's just gone ballistic. And, like, just what he does. He's against Mr. Sinister. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I have only 2 issues as part of Strife's Song, and it crossed over with Uncanny X-Men and Astonishing X-Men, X-Factor, and X-Force.
Oh my god.
I still have no idea what happened in Strife's Song, but I know that the X-Men won, because when it was over, it got to the next issue, they were back as though nothing had ever happened. And it was all cool.
Right.
So,
as one does.
Right, and I never looked up what happened. I still haven't looked up. I haven't, you know, looked up the arc in Wikipedia or anything. I just haven't. And that was my first experience with it. And then it started kind of happening again later, because Uncanny and X-Men would continue to like overlap, and they would start, you know, referencing to stuff between one another. And I was a senior in high school. I couldn't afford to get both issues every month.
Right.
I was so happy I was able to get what I was able to get. And because even back then, I do remember they were expensive.
They had a huge price hike around that time.
They were about $5 an issue, which is, and I know they've gone extremely down since then for print. But I mean, at the time, it was very high quality. I mean, I can pull out some and show you like exactly how amazing the paper is, the colors.
Right.
It was really high quality. But, you know, so again, $5 in 1995 when you're a senior in high school and have no job. It's a little hard to come by at times, especially when you're supposed to be saving up every penny for college.
Right.
So I never could cross over into that. And so I never really had to experience that. And then now I fast forward to now, and we get to Inhumans versus X-Men. Where,
right.
And I already had subscribed to my series. I hadn't subscribed to anything else. And they were mentioning stuff that was going on in that arc, but it was so out of place. I was so lost that I had to get the actual Inhumans versus X-Men miniseries, which I would almost would rather them have just the crossovers going on without having to buy mm-hmm. an extra miniseries in the middle.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I think, so one of the things that, so you have that, right? You have just these constant crossovers. You have these huge sweeping arcs that are taking care of all of the characters. You have this constant relaunching of, oh, okay. Well, and also, and you mentioned this too, and I think this is another thing that's always kind of bothered me, is that, especially with the X-Men, the X-Men are most guilty of this, that it's kind of like, they do, they shake. They put all the ingredients into a mixer, they shake them up, and then they pour them out. And let's say you have 2 favorite characters who happen to be in one series together. When the chips fall where they may not end up in the same series. And then you have 2 series that you have to read. And it reminds me a lot like a family tree, where, like, it's okay, we have this one series, and now these two characters are going off to their series, and then maybe you find two characters you like in those series, and then they mix them up and they relaunch them, and then you have, like, three series or four series that you need to read now, because you gotta keep up with these characters, by gosh! And, again, it's... In a lot of ways, I was complaining about this once, like, just randomly ranting with my dad. He looks at me, because he doesn't give a shit about any of this, right? And I'm usually speaking Greek to him. He looks at me, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's like when free agency came to baseball. And I was like, oh, my God, it totally is.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy.
It totally is.
Yeah, because I remember hearing, I don't remember when this was, because I do listen to a sports radio, usually when I'm in my car. I don't remember when I heard this, but it was way before listening to sports radio. It might have been when I was in college. And I heard somebody say that you can't be a fan of a team anymore. You're right. A fan of certain players, and you go where they go. And I was like, well, that's full of crap. Well, it totally happened with me with mm-hmm. Peyton Manning. I mean, I was never a diehard Colts fan. Never. I was a Peyton Manning fan. And mm-hmm. he went to the Broncos. That killed me because I've been mad at the Broncos since 1996. For beating the Packers in the Super Bowl. But, you know, at the same time, I'm such a fan of Peyton Manning. I got over that. And I'm so glad I did, because then I got to see him win his second Super Bowl. Basically, I got to watch the team help him limp.
Limp across. Yeah, I would really say that.
God, him and his glass back and neck, man.
Our defense there.
But I felt so bad for him. But that's how it is. And it's like, you know, I was a diehard Packers fan, and when Brett Favre left, I'm still a really big Packers fan. But I'm not as vigilant as I am watching it.
Well, and that's, so my dad had complained about that with baseball, right? He was like, well, back in the day, you could cheer for this team, but then all the good players just went wherever the fuck they wanted. And he's like, then it became harder because, okay, I really, really like this team, but now my two favorite players are gone, so I guess I'll follow them. So in a lot of ways, that kind of reminds me of what Marvel's doing. But then, so there's two other things that I really want to talk about with comics, too, is that, so I mentioned a lot that I let my daughter read comics. Mm-hmm. And there was a line in the CBR article that really, really stuck out to me. They said that, that leaves one special case, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, a series which my daughter loves, by the way. A title that sells quite poorly through the direct market. The last issue sold an estimated 8,400 copies, but very well in trade due in no small part in being represented at Scholastic book fairs. And that's one thing with comics right now, especially, that I feel like they're really missing. And I'm not saying comics are for kids, because we're grown-ass adults, and we read a lot of comics. I really like the mature, dark storylines, but there is a decided lack in comics that you can give to younger generations and younger audiences, because that's where they get hooked.
Right.
And there were, of course, dark elements when I was reading comics in the 80s. Some of the stuff, Alan Moore was running around, so you know there was some dark-ass shit going on there. But a lot of it was still friendly enough, right? Or like, and like, I go back and I read some of these old issues, and it dawns on me that some of those more adult elements occasionally, like Swamp Thing, Alan Moore's old Swamp Thing, there are some interesting things in there, but a lot of them went over my head as a kid. And right now, Marvel has two series which can target that young demographic, and that's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and Ms. Marvel. Everything else either has such convoluted backstories that I'm like, God, I don't even know where to start with this with you, or they're just a little too dark.
And I don't. Or they like hopping in bed a little too much. And like, as in like you're seeing it. Like, not the actual sex, yes. But they're naked, they are in bed.
Or they're. Good clean violence, which is that there's no sex, no heads getting blown apart, people getting tortured, shit like that. Because I have a 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say is that Marvel has that more than DC. Marvel is actually very good about kind of bleeping out all swear words. I mean, they put in the symbols, but I mean they still have the sex in there, because I saw it in All New X-Men and with Laura and Angel, and but it's not as dark. Like, I told this to Jen. So I used to get a loot crate. stuff, because Jen and I actually both used to write for the Daily Crate. So, and one of the things we got was we always got loot crates. Well, there always was a comic in there, and it was usually a variant cover, special loot crate variant cover for a comic. Either it was like a trade, or it was like a number one of something. Well, most of the time I was just like, oh, whatever, I just kind of gave them to Gabe, because actually I didn't know that they were variant covers. I thought there was this special comic they did for Loot Crate. Well, he brings, so I gave him a Batman one. I was like, oh, whatever, it's Batman. And he comes down, he's like, Mom, I don't really understand what happened in the story. So I'm reading it, and I'm realizing it's a variant cover, because this is a standalone comic about how Batman is dealing with post the death of the family. And I'm reading this going, oh, holy shit.
Where do I start with this one, son?
This is the stuff that Gabe does not need to know about. You know, because he even said, he's like, Joker's face gives me nightmares. I'm like, honey, this face, this is the one where he sliced off his face and wears it as a mask. I'm like, baby, this face gives mommy nightmares. I mean, this is not... Yeah. Not for normal people. And so then I had to look through all of his comics that I had, you know, right. given him. And I had to take out Rocket Raccoon because he starts talking about doing things to this girl, which Gabe didn't get. But I'm like, nope, I have to take that. And then I had to take back Iron Man because there was a horrible scene where they blew someone's head off and Pink Cloud. And I'm like, nope, got to take that back. So I agree with you 100%, you know, because in the kids, you know, years ago, there actually would always be, like, the dark Batman comic, and then there was always, like, a Batman for kids. I had, like, Batman and Young Robin, and it was always kind
right,
of fun.
Right.
They don't have any...
of the traditional, I don't want to say wholesome, but that's kind of the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Family comic, right? It would appeal to a wide audience.
Right. And that's how you would get
that
them.
That kind of stuff. Yeah, and that's how you would get them. And I hate to say it, like, remind Marvel and... DC, like, so DC, I made a joke when they were talking about, like, they're bringing in all those old 70s things, like the Banana Splits and Snagglepuss, and I understand what they're saying to themselves, we gotta get that hot, hot, lucrative, older Gen X audience in, but that's not where it is. Most people who were comic book readers got hooked when they were kids. And again, I'm not saying that all the series have to be kid-friendly or directed at kids, but you do have to keep that in mind, like, When you look at your trade sales of your kid-friendly stuff, like Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and you see that those are selling higher. I mean, because they were, like, last year, my daughter's school book fair, Ms. Marvel and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur were prominently displayed, which made me so happy. But so you have that. And then I think, and this is me being a little judgy, I totally admit that. I'm going to preface this by that. But, like, there's just some crazy shit going on in Marvel right now. Mjolnir being sentient. Like, I feel like you have these really strong characters and ideas, and in the writing, they just... they don't know. And I wonder, like, part of me wonders if they lured in people through the movies, right?
Right.
But the movies are kind of killing it story-wise. Like, take, for example, Civil War. I'm sorry, and I will stand by this. I hate the comic book Civil War series. It was stupid. That plot line, in fact, when they announced they were making a Civil War movie, I was like, fuck that. I read the comic series. That shit was stupid. But they managed to boil out a lot of the really ridiculous-y parts and just make a nice streamlined experience, right? They kept the essence, but they did make it more cinematic. And part of me wonders if they're if they're losing audience to that, too, right? Like, I don't need to read the comics. I'll just wait till it comes to the big screen.
Except that, someone said that to me. What I would say is, what's coming on the big screen, though, is usually typically classic stories. Like, Age of Ultron, that's a very classic Avengers story. Same thing with Civil War. I mean, that's 2000, not really exactly classic, but we're getting there. It's almost been 20 years.
Oh, it's depressing.
But, you know, these are like, well, okay, then let's go to the Sony and Fox side with X-Men. You know,
do we have to?
Just very, 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 very briefly. Like, you know, how they totally botched the Dark Phoenix saga. And yes, I understand that they couldn't have made it, you know, brought the Shi'ar in and all that. And I wouldn't have wanted them to, but they didn't have to make that. That was terrible.
Right.
But Days of Future Past, that is probably the epitome of classic
Yes.
X-Men story right there is the Days of Future Past. And second to that would be the Dark Phoenix saga. And the third to that would be Apocalypse, although Apocalypse can die in a fire.
So actually that was one, I will say that was one where, so, and this is one of those things with me with Marvel that I make a lot of fun of X-Men. I bailed on X-Men for realsies in the early 90s. There were two storylines in particular that drove me away and I just hated them. And I came back a little and dabbled in the early 2000s, but then I got right back on the bandwagon. I guess that's what you say if you've quit. I don't know. Anyways.
You got back on the wagon.
I got back on the wagon, not the bandwagon. I got back on the wagon and got off of them. But one of the stories for me that was a classic story was Days of Future Past. And having seen the movie, I still, like, when I think about the Days of Future Past movie, I still get angry. And, like, it's not a fandom I'm really attached to, but for some reason that story was one of those ones that just stuck with me. And, like, even though I left X-Men and I get really pissed and irritated, I'm like, oh, God, X-Men, young me still has a strong affinity. And it's like, with the Marvel movies, I feel like they're taking their kind of, oh, my God, this is all over the place, let's boil it down and make it better. And Sony and Fox, they're just like, oh, really good story? Let's make it shit. And, like, with the thing that pissed me off the most about Days of Future Past was it was a story about Kitty Pryde. That story was a Kitty Pryde story, mm-hmm. and Fox made it a fucking Wolverine story. And do not.
Are you serious? I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah.
No, because I broke up with the X-Men movies after X3.
Oh, Jesus.
So I have not seen
it. I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. There's only two X-Men movies.
So I've never seen, like, the First Class, that reboot going on. I've never seen any of the Wolverine movies because fuck that guy.
So what they do is Kitty Pryde is in it, but she sends Wolverine back to the past, and it becomes more like a Wolverine story. He's the one who's doing all of these things, and Kitty Pryde's just kind of there. She becomes the sidekick, whereas in the stories, it was reverse. It was definitely a Kitty Pryde story. And it's because, you know, that Hugh Jackman, yo. So, but I feel like there's just so many crazy things going on right now in Marvel, and, like, it feels like such a cop-out to be like, oh, it's just because we have too many women and too many diverse characters. Like, Ms. Marvel has been universally acknowledged as being amazing because the story writing's good. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to, and this is a common argument that you and I have had in video games. There was a game that came out several years ago called Remember Me.
Hmm.
And it was a flaming piece of shit. Because the story was nonsensical. The dialogue was terrible. The world was awful. It was the most linear, closed-in experience I have ever experienced in a game. That's not true, but it was one of the top 10. It was just bad. The combat was shoddy. The story made no sense, but it starred a female character. And so the message was...
It starred a black female character.
A black female character. So the message was, oh, well, black female characters don't sell. Maybe if you'd put some effort into the goddamn game, they would have. And it's stuff like that. I actually wrote a huge article years ago bitching about that. Is it that women characters don't sell or that people do not give them the chance that they deserve, right? And part of me wonders the same thing with Marvel. Is it that your female characters don't sell or is it because you're not giving them the chance or giving them the resources, giving them the good writers? Marvel has some great writers at their disposal, and yet very few of them ever seem to land on a female series.
I'd argue that it's partly that, for sure. Definitely. I would also say that I could see, sound the misogyny alarms, I could see where some people are getting irritated. It's not that there's so many female characters, it's just that there's almost like an overabundance. Like, it feels like, so it was always male, right? Very few female. And then we're kind of going this way, and now it's gone back the other way. And Marvel's just totally swung the pendulum the other way, so it's a lot of female, not very many male. Like, for some reason, we just don't have this even-keel balance.
And right.
So it's like, you know, with Thor, I totally admit, I got into Thor. I've never cared about Thor. Never. And I started reading it because Thor was now a woman. I was very intrigued by it, mainly because I wanted to know what she was going to be like. and who she was and all that. And I think the problem is that not that they made Thor a woman. That's not the problem. The problem is that that's not the only one they did that to. And yes, they have a lot of the younger ones coming in. For example, like the all-new Hawkeye.
Right.
That's a woman. All-new Wolverine. Another woman. So you have all that, and plus in a lot of the teams, suddenly the men are getting booted out for women leaders. And of course, like, I think it's awesome to have women leaders, but at the same time, we need to get some balance here. Like, we can't just, you know, shuffle, you know, like, no men, because then that's going to alienate your audience the same way it would alienate women if it was all men. You can't keep swinging the pendulum, you know, and it's, and to me, it's not even about race. Like, I honestly don't care what race any of these people are. I really don't. I think they tell some great stories when they really get into the race about it. Like, for example, Cyborg and Captain America's Sam Wilson, especially now that Misty Knight is there. It brings some amazing insights into that. But no, I'm not the one who's screaming about there's too much diversity in races. No, it's just like, yeah, it's, you know what, Marvel, it's awesome we have all these women. But maybe make it where it's not seeming like you're pandering.
Well, I think the problem there is that they're not... So one of the things that I love that Kelly Sue DeConnick did with Captain Marvel was that she took an established character. She took Ms. Marvel, right? And she said, what if we give her more of a feminist lean? What if we give her a practical costume? What if I elevate her from Ms. to Captain? Like, what if we give her the stronger background and we go forth?
What if we and get her out of this coma?
Right? novel concept. But so they did that, and that was awesome, because they took an established female character, mm-hmm. and they revamped her, and they made her better. Mm-hmm. And then Ms. Marvel's mantle was open, so they created a new Ms. Marvel with Kamala Khan, right?
Which is awesome.
And there are a plethora of female characters in the Marvel Universe that you could do. You could take these minor characters... Oh, God. I might throw up as I say this, but take Squirrel Girl, for instance. Oh, God. Okay. Whew, threw up in my mouth a little bit. Anyways, so Squirrel Girl, minor character, they turned her into a hipster dream girl, right? Like, and as much as I did... She's such a hipster comic... Like, this comes from the hipster comic girl! She is the skinny leg and lumberjack plaid shirt of the comic world. And... But, like, I was like, shit, yeah, do it. You've got a female character, take her and make her awesome. Make her her own. Stop taking established characters and then just saying, oh, we're going to make them female. Femthor. Like, Spider-Gwen. We're just going to take... we're going to take a traditional male character, slap a female sidekick in there, and call it good. It's terrible because, A... It kind of says, oh, well, you know, Thor, there's a problem with Thor. We should definitely make him a woman, as you're saying, kind of to pander. But the reason I don't like it is that all of that baggage with Thor is not shed when you put Jane Foster into wielding Mjolnir and you put her in, I know,
spoilers!
Right? Sorry. That was like a 2-year-old spoiler.
Yeah, it
was. But... It's not, you haven't suddenly made this new and interesting character. She's still Jane Foster. It's still Thor. It's still Mjolnir. Like, to me, that's not an interesting female character. You're not picking something up and making it new and revamping it. All you're doing is just doing a gender swap, and all of that baggage just comes in. Like with Ms. Marvel, making her Captain Marvel, you were able to say, okay, this is a clear line in the sand, all of that other shit, yep, that happened, but now this is Captain Marvel. And that was great, because you're taking these female characters, and it's kind of, the reason that I liked it is that, especially with, and this is going to sound so prudish when I say this, and I don't mean it this way, but Kelly Sue DeConnick took a character who was renowned for wearing basically a fucking swimsuit, as her costume, she was the sex symbol, right? She took the sex symbol character and made her into this feminist icon, right? And that, to me, was really awesome. Because then you had this... it was kind of like taking it back, right? And It was taking it back and owning it, and that I liked. That was saying, you know what? No, this girl is not just going to be some useless sex symbol anymore.
Right.
Not that Ms. Marvel was totally useless, but she wasn't a great character. And having read Ms. Marvel as a young teenager,
well, I guess that's why they kind of put her in a coma.
Yeah, exactly. Like when that becomes your stop. So, I don't know. I think part of me wonders: is that the best way to, if you want to lure in female audiences? Just saying, hey, y'all can have a Thor too. Like, I'm not really sure. We, you know, one of the, so to me, it's like the girl Lego argument, right?
Oh, yeah.
Legos already were kind of. We didn't need little pink girly ones. Like, you can still pretend. I don't know. To me, yeah. So part of me wonders if that, maybe you're just taking the wrong approach. Like, oh, well, now we're just going to take this other character and slap him in here, and hey, we're all good, right? So it does feel a little pandery. I totally agree with you on that.
Funny thing about the Legos is that my oldest son loves those girl Legos with the elf and the princess and all that. And a lot of his girl friends that probably wouldn't care about Legos love that. So I kind of see it both ways where it's just like, so you're saying girls like pink, but I don't think they meant it that way. I think they just wanted another avenue for girls to come in. And unfortunately, you got something like that, I see a problem because you want to cater to everybody, and then, but you, and then you don't want to set them apart too. And I think, right. I think that's maybe that's what some of the comic publishers feel like they need to do. Mm-hmm. I loved what you said, you know, bring, you know, an established character and have them rise up, which is, you know, mm-hmm. like for example, like Sam Wilson taking over as Captain America. He was already,
right.
he was already part of that. It makes the most sense for him too, so there's no issue with that.
Right.
I mean, I did have an issue when it was first announced. I know I've talked about this before because I thought they were literally pandering. I didn't. I thought they were just like, yeah, well, you know, kind of like what they did with Spider-Man. Like, no more Peter Parker. We're just going to bring in a Hispanic guy. And it's like, okay, but does that really serve any purpose other than just saying that now you're trying mm-hmm. to cater to this market? And that's really what I thought they were doing with Sam Wilson. And I'm so glad I was wrong on that. I mean, it makes right. total sense why they did that. But like you said, like established characters. I'm trying to look across my desk. Like, you know, if they made a, you know, they could take Psylocke, for example. She's probably one of my favorite X-Men. She is so badass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take her and do something with her besides killing Magneto, which was actually kind of awesome that she did, even though he already had a backup plan because he knew she was going to do it. But, you know, and if you're going to, like, bring in established characters, like, can it please not be Jean Grey? I mean, Marvel, you guys killed her for a reason. Like,
yes, yes, you did.
Since we've established yeah. that these youngins can't go back to their other time because of magic, like, can we just,
oh yeah, no, I,
we can still kill her again.
There are so many
so
things
open.
Like that
we can kill her again. Yeah. It's open.
It's not too late, guys. Yeah. I also hate Jean Grey.
Yeah, well, she's got a solo series, so I guess,
oh,
you know,
good,
I guess, you know, at the same time it's like, well, hey, Carrie and Jen, we're taking an established character and giving her a series. But, you know, it's like, why that bitch?
Well, and the problem with that, too, is that Jean, oh god, how do I word this? Jean, and I've been with Jean a few years, right? I've followed Jean's progression. Jean almost always devolves into a few things, right? They start to hint back at the Phoenix Saga. And they're done that, guys. Don't need to revisit this ground anymore.
Oh, yeah. The Shi'ar have already come and kidnapped her to try her for something that she did in the past, but her future.
That just hurt my head.
That was when Kitty Pryde started hanging out with Peter Quill and got married. But apparently they're divorced now, so hey.
You know, if you would have read one of the 6 series about that, you would know why. And, but, like, with Jean, so you get that. You also have the Cyclops and Logan love triangle. They just can't get enough of that shit.
Well, that
and
can't
it
happen
always
now.
Comes out. Right. But her and Cyclops, any portion of that, right? Like, you always have to deal with Jean needing some dude in her life. There's just all these things about Jean Grey that, again, there's just so much baggage with that character. I wish they would do like a hard reset with her, break her off, divorce her from the X-Men, or just like say, look, now this is new Jean Grey, this is Captain Marvel Jean Grey. This is the Jean who is going to just move on in a whole new character arc, and we ain't going to talk about any of that shit that happened 20 years ago.
I would be like, yes. You know what? I would actually like it if this Jean Grey went gay.
Now, that would be awesome, too.
It really would.
That would be delightful.
It would, because, you know, it's already happening. It happened in X-Men Prime that Angel was already trying to make a move on her. It's just like how it was back in the 60s. All of them were in love with her. And it's happening again. And, of course, you know, Iceman, you know, now that he's come out, it's cool with him. He's just like, Scotty, Angel's, like, hitting on your girl. And Jean's already made out with young Hank. And
yeah. She's the Smurfette of the comic book world.
Oh, God, like, she is.
It's the girl, and she's not the only female X-Men, but for some reason, she's the female X-Man that everyone gravitates toward, and they always have to have all these people being in love with Jean Grey, and I would actually love it. Although, you know, even if she was gay, like, as long as she had this, I mean, if they could shake that, I need to have a romance option in my life. Because, honestly, if they just had then all these female characters and her constantly needing to be in a romance with another character, you'd have the same problem.
Exactly.
Right? It's the same thing. It's basically, I would like Jean Grey to stand on her own two feet for a little while.
No, there's so much I would like to see with it. So there you go. Won't you subscribe to that?
No.
I mean, she cut her hair, Jen. She's changed.
Woo, character development.
It's now like to
actually,
her chin.
For Jean Grey, that is character development. So I think what we're saying here is that I think that's an easy cop-out answer.
I think to say that it's about women and...
It's about women and diversity. Maybe that's a thread you're picking up on, but again, if you just go back to thinking of how many series Marvel has on the board. I mean, they relaunched 104 series in a 2 years time span.
Okay, that word you just said. That's the problem. Relaunch.
Yes. Yes, I think that's their biggest problem. But also, when we've said there's like, we've come up with 5 different reasons why it could be right here. When you're dealing with 104 series, I don't think it's any one thing. I don't think you can just say, oh, it's because of women and diversity. No, it's because you've got a million series. You keep relaunching the shit. There's so many number ones. People keep going to new series. It's making it hard to follow. Like, there's so many different reasons. And Marvel needs a product manager, damn it. Call me, Marvel. I'm available.
Do you know how ridiculous it is to go look up Uncanny X-Men and see 4 to 5 different series for it? Because depending on what
you use... Yeah.
And DC is coming to this, thanks to the New 52 and Rebirth and all that. They didn't used to be so bad. But, you know, because when I started subscribing to the all-new X-Men and, what was it? I don't even remember. The Uncanny X-Men, the one that was back from 2012. I was trying to read this and I realized there's stuff that happened before then. And this other Uncanny X-Men series that I needed to catch up on. I was like, well, what the fuck, man? When you have that many series that are named the same.
Yes. At least think in new words, man. Like, I kind of kiddingly made a jab at both Square Enix and Capcom, but hey, and Konami, maybe you should take a hint from them. I'm just saying, there's a plethora of words out there for you. Just go peruse Capcom's catalog. I'm sure you'll pick up a few new words.
Yeah, but the difference between Capcom is that they just redo, like, their Street Fighter and throw in a couple of new characters and change the moves and then slap on a Hyper Alpha.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I mean, at this point, like, okay, we've moved this person, Angels, now in this series. So we'll call this one Hyper Alpha X-Men. And the one with Angel will now be Turbo X-Men. Like, there's other words, man. Come on, stop going uncanny. That shit should just be... It's like a jersey, like when a player retires and they retire his number. Like with Elway retired, there'll be no more Denver Bronco number 7 because that'll be Elway's number. Mm-hmm. I'm saying they should start retiring words.
I get it, but I'm actually like that they keep the uncanny alive.
Just, ah!
I do, again, because like that, it's got so much history behind it, even though no one really uses that word anymore. But, I mean, I'm honestly, at this point, I'm just thankful that they don't have, you know, the Uncanny X-Men, X-Men, Astonishing X-Men, and Amazing X-Men. And I'm not exaggerating because those all existed at the same time.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Well, all right, should we talk about what we've been reading this week?
Yeah, I'll go first because mine's really, really brief. Like, really, really
brief. Yeah, it is. Jesus, woman.
Well, so I, like, caught up on a last week, and I guess I feel like I already talked about it, but I guess it was, like, just all the X-Men ending. Maybe I didn't.
Yeah.
But it was, like, all the X-Men ending, like, all new X-Men, Extraordinary X-Men, and Uncanny X-Men ending, and it was, because, you know, now the Inhumans and X-Men War is over, and for some reason everyone's like, well, what do we do now? I'm like, I don't understand why you don't know what to do now. I don't know. I don't know, brain. The same thing we do every night? I mean...
Right.
Why is it just now?
Maybe go and save the world rather than fighting each other? I don't fucking know.
And it's like, you know, in Storm's like, oh, Moby and Psylocke just sucks. And, like, I don't know why it sucks. You guys can go back now. You guys don't have to hide in limbo anymore because there's no more danger and killing everything. I don't understand why you're just like, and everyone's like, what do we do now? I'm like, why are you guys asking, what do you do now? I don't understand that. You go back to running a school. What's...
Right.
Go back to doing what you were doing before the Terrigen was out killing you. Yes, I know the Terrigen's been out killing you guys since about 2015, but that's only been a couple years.
Right.
We can go back to establishing a school and all that. And so, you know, in Kitty Pryde, I got I have X-Men Prime on there as well. So maybe I don't have, but it all ties together. So, you know, and Storm's just like, yeah, I just don't think I can do this anymore. And then Jean's like, well, I guess I'll go back with the all-new X-Men. And they're having a dance party, and...
Well, as one does.
Right, so they're all trying to figure out what they're going to do, because Hank takes the original five, takes them back to their time, to show them that the universe righted itself.
What
in
does
that
mean?
And that they never left. When Present Beast took them away, the universe corrected itself and made it that they never left. So they're kind of from a... They're like... They're living out of time.
Okay. Sure. Why not?
And eventually... Really what this is what I've been saying all along. I was like... I always said when they came here, like, that makes total sense. You know, they'll eventually go back and Professor X will wipe their minds. Well, then when Angel changed his wings, that changed kind of everything. Because he just can't wake up one day and be like, where'd this come from? I didn't have fire when I went to bed. Like, what happened? So it was an easy out to get these original five to stay in the present and kind of do their own thing. So as they were all sad about it, and Scott was especially mopey about it, because I think he really did want to go home, you know, be with Professor X again and all that, and have a chance to kind of maybe change how the future goes, especially how his own future goes. But, you know, now they can't do that, and they're here, and he's very sad about it. Jean Grey, like, pretty much rubs all over him and then gets pissy when he kisses her. She's like, oh, no, we can't do that. That's like going backwards or going sideways or something. We can't discuss that. So then he's like, okay. So then they're like, yeah, impromptu dance party, or Kid Apocalypse's impromptu dance party. And then they dance. Okay, whatever. We go over to the Extraordinary X-Men, where Storm is still acting all mopey. You know, they have no idea what to do. And, you know, so then they have a baseball game after they send all the refugee mutants home. The interesting one is Uncanny X-Men, which makes perfect sense because it's written by Cullen Bunn, who's an amazing writer. So what happens in Uncanny X-Men, is that Magneto, like, Psylocke said when she left the X-Men, because she left the X-Men and she found out that Magneto, behind everybody's backs, was aligning themselves with the Hellfire Club, and she could not deal with that. And so she told him telepathically, she told him if he was ever going to take mutant kind down a path that she thought that they couldn't recover from, she would kill him. So then we fast forward to, you know, Inhumans versus X-Men, where we learn that Emma Frost did share with Magneto her lies and what she did with Scott. And Magneto was just totally fine with all of that. And he's like, yeah, I'm cool with killing all the Inhumans. That works because, you know, mutants rule, man. He's like, almost like,
oh, that's true.
He is almost like a Doyle. Like, he's going to mutants rule as he's going down the, and knocking kids, you know, lunch bags out of their hands.
Right.
So and when Psylocke, you know, finds out all that, like, she was not going to let that sit idly by. Like, she was all out to help mutant kind, but when she found out that Emma Frost lied about all that and Magneto knew all about all of it, she couldn't deal with it. So she did track him down to try to kill him, and he was expecting her. He knew this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he almost kind of, like, wish he did just, I guess, so following it through. But, of course, in the Magneto, in his own way, he is saying that Psylocke is really the embodiment of everything that he is and he feels. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Okay, sure. Okay, makes
yeah,
total sense.
Yeah, okay, buddy.
The coolest part about the whole thing is when she, like, because she's, you know, she's a, well, this, her body. Let's not get into her, how her body is and all that. But her, she is a ninja, and so she had brought a katana. And, of course, she was charging at him with it. And he's like, did you really come at me with a metal sword? And, of course, he, you know, breaks it. And she said, no, that's not it. And as she whips around him and he breaks it, she stabs him through the chest with a psychic blade. She's honed down her psychic knife to a psychic katana and stabs him cleanly through the heart. Well, actually, not through the heart because he was still living. It was just right through the chest. And, of course, she does the thing that villains never do when they kill someone, and she didn't stay and make sure he was dead.
You know, like, actually make sure he was dead, maybe?
Yeah, no, she walked away, and of course Magneto had a backup plan just in case she actually did do it. And it was these two mutants that he rescued, and they promised to do him one favor, and they were done with him. Well, they did their one favor, they saved him. And now he said that he is going to, you know, continue to be dead to the world because he has more things to do for mutant kind. So,
mm-hmm.
So I guess there you go. Magneto's back with on the villain side for sure. So also X-Men Prime released that same day, and this was like, it's a standalone book to bridge what's going to happen with the X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, Generation X, all Cable, well, not really Cable, all the extra stuff that they're going to have.
Who the fuck is that?
Coming in the future. I don't know what's going to happen with Cable. I'm actually fascinated by that, and I'll get to that, I guess, in a bit when I get to Uncanny Avengers. Because they are going to do a Cable standalone comic, and
our buddy Seth was pretty excited about that. He's a huge Cable fan.
Yeah, I'll get to why that's interesting in a minute. But so it has Kitty Pryde just come back. She's decided that she wants to be a normal human. So she's like, she's taking ballet class.
Yeah. Why not?
And Storm comes in and is like, we need to talk. And Storm basically tells her that she's leaving the X-Men and she wants Kitty to take over. And Kitty's like, I can't do this. I need to be done. She's like, well, can you just at least please come back to the mansion and you make your decision then, which was still in limbo. They hadn't moved it yet. So she goes out there, talks to Magic, and she sees Magic, who is her best friend, and realizes, maybe I do need to stay. And of course, and then the real reason I think she stays comes around the corner is when she finds out that Colossus has taken over her old room.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yeah, he was like, well, I don't think you'd be back. You got married. Because everybody stays married, Colossus.
You know, to be fair, though, in Colossus's mind, that was not an unfair assumption.
I guess so. It was just...
It's Colossus. And also, like, they were married for, like, what, a week?
Maybe a couple of months, I don't know.
Right? Like, you know, that seems abrupt.
Well, maybe a year. Maybe, yeah, because...
Still, like, a year. It seems, like, okay to assume that maybe someone will be married for at least a few years.
Maybe, I don't know. But and Kitty does eventually decide to stay. The younger original X-Men decide to leave. They go out on their own. Lady Deathstrike comes back. I know Jen's excited about Lady Deathstrike.
Why?
Because she's going to be in a new comic called Weapon X.
Why not?
Because it's going to be her and Old Man Logan and Sabretooth and Domino and a couple of others.
Domino.
they're all being hunted down because they were all experimented on for their, right. You know, their mutant abilities, their healing factors. So we got that going on in the future. Which actually I've subscribed to Weapon X because I don't want to let go of Sabretooth. I'm really curious what he's doing. What happened with Monet? Because all Psylocke said was that they left together. And all we see is a
together,
panel.
Together, together?
Well, all we see is a panel with her, you know, feeding on him with her vampiric brother hands thing. I don't know.
Right. The weird tentacle, hand tentacles.
Right. yeah. So, you know, we have all that going on. And so then Kitty's like, yes, I will take over. But I have, like, two requests. One is where we move Xavier's mansion. And two, Storm, you have to stay. Storm's like, okay, I'll stay. So they move the mansion from Limbo to Central Park.
The Central Park, huh?
Yes, in New York. Because Kitty's reasoning for this was that she said that, you know, we can't hide in Limbo. And we can't hide in Westchester anymore. We need to be heroes, and we need to be out in the open where they can see us.
Like, and the city of New York isn't going to have a thing to say about that.
Yeah, I kind of wondered that too. I think that
I've been to Central Park. I'm not really sure there's a part of it that, you know, oh, nobody goes there. We don't go down that road.
Well, but that's their point, was to be like in the middle of everything, and I get that point. But at the same time, I don't think the city of New York is cool with just planting a mansion in Central Park, even if it is on the outside edges. I think they have rules about that.
I think there's some rules. Otherwise, just, you know, set up a condo development, right? How about condos in the middle of Central Park?
Well, people can't camp there, so do you think a mansion can just go sit out there? I mean, come on.
To be fair, what are they going to do? Make them move?
Yeah, they could.
Well, they could, I guess, try. That's true. I mean,
They could roll in the tanks. They could roll in wrecking balls, you know.
Miley Cyrus? Anyways.
No, no, don't. Why do you have to ruin things?
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's your mutant ability. So now I'm going to jump into Uncanny Avengers. So at the end of the last week's Uncanny Avengers, Larry and Jen were having a lot of fun with Uncanny Avengers. And all this, because...
oh, yes.
So it took a... So Deadpool... Rogue was beating the literal shit out of Deadpool. Like, it was really painful to watch what she was doing to him. And, of course, you know, Red Skull being what he is, he's like, sure, Deadpool, you want to talk? Go on ahead and talk. I have all the time in the world. Let me eat my ice cream. Literally, is what he's doing, eating ice cream Sunday. And Deadpool's like, yeah, so, you know, Rogue told me to go get help, and... So I went to go ask people, and they didn't want to help. So then went to the X-Men mansion, and it was kind of gone. It shows him, like, in the hole in the ground, because the X-Men mansion, you know, is gone. It's in limbo. So it took the whole thing, foundation and all. So
why the hell not?
And so he goes, and he's like, well, you know, they have a, they're very sentimentalist things. So he grabs... Suddenly, he reaches for his backpack that he has and grabs out Magneto's helmet, which we all know is impervious to psychic attacks, and puts it on Rogue's head. So instantly, Rogue is severed from Red Skull's mind control, which, of course, then she just goes after Red Skull, after she apologizes, of course, several times to Deadpool, who's pretty torn up on the ground. She goes after Red Skull. She doesn't kill him. She just chokes him into submission. He's unconscious. And she runs off with him. The other Avengers are curious where she's going, because it was never discussed. And Deadpool, as we're picking Deadpool, he said that killing Red Skull was never part of the plan. And they're all confused because they, you know, they're like, well, what plan was it? And it shows up Rogue... showing up with the unconscious Red Skull in Beast's little hideout, saying, "We need brain surgery." And it literally ends with Beast going, "Oh my stars and garters!" So Jen and Larry both. So the new one came out today, and Jen and Larry both were like, "The brain surgery doesn't happen. There's going to be a dance party in the middle of the brain surgery."
This brought me more amusement in the last week and a half than, like, anything else.
And Red Skull, he's gonna, you know, mind control them all so they can't handle it, even though, actually, Rogue was very smart and left on Magneto's helmet the entire time. So at least she could, you know, snap Beast out of it if she had to. But, so the comic started, the surgery was already over. So there was no chance of any interruptions, and so I got to learn, how he had these Professor X's brain and his brain in there. Okay, I say that
so okay, I of. Have to know this, because when you said, you were like, oh, they're gonna do brain surgery, I didn't really think that he literally had Professor X's brain. Like, I thought it was more of like, oh, he absorbed his consciousness or some, like, through some weird magic. It's fucking Red Skull. It could have been a voodoo ceremony for all I know, right? So, like, I was a little confused when you're like, oh, they're gonna do brain surgery. Like, shit, are they gonna cut out his hypothalamus? That's brain humor. Anyways. So, please, Carrie, tell me, okay, how did he have Professor X's brain?
Well, I don't have a good explanation as to what they said.
Is it going to be like a cow where he has four stomachs, but instead he has like four brains?
Well, like, because Larry Hughes was like, how does he have, two brains in his skull? Because at the start of Uncanny Avengers in 2012, it has Red Skull excising, or exhuming, I should say, Professor X from his grave, and he peels open his... I really wish they hadn't actually illustrated the splitting open of the head, and as he takes the brain out and all that. And next thing you know, that he has all of his powers. He's like, he took the brain. How did that happen? Well, according to this, he...
Osmosis?
He had taken the telepath...
Oh, God, I can't tell I'm already going to love this response.
Apparently he just took the telepathic portion of Xavier's brain and, like, attached it or inserted it into his own.
What the shit?
It's like, I don't know, maybe he had, like, a special organ, you know, a special organelle, I should say, you know, as part of the brain. You know, like a separate hypothalamus. I really don't know.
He took the RAM card out of that one and just installed it into another one. You know, in the spot that we all have to... Ooh, it's like the Trill from Star Trek. They have, like, a special organ area that they can pass on, and so you just, you know, oh, this just fits right into your brain. Most of us don't use that. Plop.
Yeah, what? I mean,
oh, my God.
Know,
maybe it was a tumor.
You know, of course, I'm like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense. And then I'm like, wait.
Oh, my God, woman.
Well, then the I actually used to study neuroscience, and that part kicked in. I was like, wait, you have four lobes. They all kind of take up. You just can't remove one to put another one in. But, you know, I guess.
I like that, like, we still have a pretty rough understanding of which all parts of the brain control what, right? Like, we have, like, a broad overview, but... I like that he was like, oh, no, I got this shit. I got you, fam. Right here.
Right. We know exactly which... I just always assumed it was all of Xavier's brain and...
Yeah, I kind of assumed that, too. But again, you know, it was probably just like a little...
So anyway, so it's just a little piece of his brain. Don't know which part. Guess it's a special telepathic piece. I don't know that they... So anyway, so they did successfully remove
it.
And once they removed it and they were sure that it was completely removed and he had no telepathic powers, and, you know, Rogue finally took off the helmet. And then who comes down the hall? Steve Rogers with a whole bunch of soldiers. Now, I don't know if they're shown as S.H.I.E.L.D. soldiers, but I'm not sure they're S.H.I.E.L.D., to be honest. I have a feeling that they're Hydra, mainly because I can't imagine S.H.I.E.L.D. agents doing what Steve Rogers was asking him to do next. And he was being a complete ass, saying, like, you know, so they're like, oh, hey, you banded us back, you know, 2012 to try to take care of the Red Skull, and you disbanded us, and we did it without you, which is actually kind of humorous. And of course, Steve, like, whips around. He's like, well, when you align yourselves with criminals, of course, you're going to take them down in a criminal way. And it's like, oh, okay, Steve. And so Steve, like, immediately grabs Rogue, and he's like, we need to talk, and... I think she's got a box in her arms, and it's Professor X's brain, what's left.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you need to give me the box. And she goes, no, nobody's going to have this, because we can't risk this ever getting out. And he said, there's nowhere that, he's like, the Avengers and the X-Men have nowhere they can keep that safe. S.H.I.E.L.D. does. And she said, right? And she said, no, I can't trust S.H.I.E.L.D. And so he, like, starts taking off his S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's like, don't make this ugly. And she goes, oh no, sugar, I won't. And then, of course, exits stage left through the wall of the hospital, because she can do that. And she flies away, and she calls for Johnny Torch's help. And he goes and meets her in the sky. It's like, are you sure you want to do this? And she said, yes. And he sets fire to the box. So there is no way that anybody can get Professor's brain and Professor X's brain. And, of course, Rogue has a very hard time with it. She's there sobbing in the sky. That's the last piece of him. And but Steve Rogers says, well, I'm taking Red Skull with us.
Mm-hmm.
So he does. And they're like, okay, well, whatever. Lock him up in a S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, Red Skull is sobbing and saying, I can't feel it anymore. She burned it. She destroyed it. How could you let her do this? You, especially, how could you let her do this? So it was like a sign that stuff's mm-hmm. already starting to come out about right. him. And then weird shit happened. Like, I don't know, Rogue making out with Deadpool and then absorbing what was killing him. And also, you know, a lot of his memories. And so then, you know, he takes off his mask and he's, you know, handsome again. And she's like, no, I can deal with this because I'm invulnerable, even though, like, her skin's, like, now rotting off, just like his. And, of course, I don't know how long this is going to last. But they continue to make out. And the funny thing about this, the loose end from the 2012 Uncanny Avengers comes out. So, if you never read 2012 Uncanny Avengers, you will have no idea that she has somebody else living in her head. And that's Wonder Man.
Who is it, Carrie?
It's Wonder Man. She accidentally absorbed him.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't remember the huge battle, but there was a huge thing, and she absorbed him, and she couldn't get him out of her head, and she lost controls of her powers, and it was really, really bad. And
right.
Anyway, so her getting Deadpool's disease, he was able to escape. Out of her.
Okay.
And that was how this one ended, and it said the next one's going to be called Coda. So I'm like, okay, so that's a PS. So I'm guessing the Uncanny Avengers is still going to end. It's just going to be in the next one. And honestly, I'm just waiting to see where Rogue's going to go next. Wherever right. she goes, just like we talked about in Free Agency, wherever mm-hmm. she goes next in comics, I will follow her, because I don't think she's in Gold or X-Men Blue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, she hasn't really been a part of the X-Men in a while. She's been with
not in a long time.
No, she's been with the Avengers since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Dr. Voodoo and Wasp and all of them are even saying how they love this team and they didn't want it to break up. And even Johnny Torch he was talking to me, he's like, I used to be part of the Fantastic Four, man. And then he goes, but I was actually Ringo.
Yeah.
Yes, that made me laugh. And he even said he didn't want to go back to the other Avengers team. And Wasp said she didn't want to either. She wanted to stay here. And Quicksilver said the same. He wanted to stay here. So, I mean, I kind of want them to stay together. But, I mean, is this going to be a third Uncanny Avengers reboot?
Right. Probably. Because it's Marvel. Sorry, subtle dig. Not so subtle.
I mean, you're right. You're 100% right. I got nothing to argue against that.
I love it.
Just gonna sit here and drink my wine. All right, so hipster girl, what you got going on?
Oh man, I got so much stuff going on. So the first thing I have to talk about is Clean Room, because I don't know how I missed this series. It's written by Gail Simone, and I know I've mentioned that I have kind of a love-hate relationship with Gail Simone. The thing about Gail Simone is that when she's good, she's so good. And when she's bad, she's bad. Right? But when she's
hot,
good,
she's hot. And when she's not, she's not.
Pretty much. When she's hot, like when she's good, God, she's good. So this series, I have to laugh a little bit about it, but we'll get there in a second. This series, it's called The Clean Room. It deals with cults, right?
Okay.
Yes, another fucking cult. But this is more like the Scientology cult. Like, she's this power of positive thinking. The Gift, actually, is what it reminds me of. She's the power of positive thinking cult, and she really caters to celebrities. But oddly, the number of people who join her cult, there's a large number who end up killing themselves shortly after they see the clean room. And so our main character, there's two main characters, both female. The main character is a journalist, and usually there's so many elements about this series that kind of make me want to roll my eyes, but it's so goddamn good. She's the plucky journalist who starts off as, I'm going to get the truth. And it quickly evolves from so much more important than that, right?
Okay, good, because I was like...
Yeah, you're already wanting to roll your eyes. Yes. Exactly. And she even makes a Lois Lane quip about how she always wanted to be Lois Lane, not Superman. So the best part, I think, to define this series is that you learn that there are very much demon-type entities. Mm-hmm. It could be... I'm not sure if it's demons or aliens yet, but they're definitely demonic. Like, in the way that they behave. So, clean room, there's the scene early on in which she finally gets to see the clean room. She finally badges herself from the cult leader, this woman named Astrid, to see the clean room. And they get in there with a guy who's a member, and they start talking to him, and they're like, and it's this white sphere. It kind of looks like the inside of Cerebro. It's just this plain white sphere. They have to totally scrub themselves before they go in. It's the dude, Astrid, and our main character, Aunt Chloe. And they're sitting there, and Astrid's talking to him, and she's like, tell me about some of your fears from your mother. And he says that, when he was a kid, and again, it starts off going the stereotypical route, right, where, my mother told me that if I touched it, white monkeys would come out from under my bed and eat it off, and it would never grow back. Right? Right? And of course, mom was religious, and I was like, oh good, here we go with this trope again. But then she's like, and the dialogue, I can't emphasize enough how sinisterly brilliant the dialogue is. They're talking back and forth, and she's asking him stuff, and she's like, okay, well then why did you go to the cemetery that night? And he talks about how he's like, I just wanted them to touch it, so if I didn't touch it. And you learned that he lured two
kids. That's fucked up.
Oh, it gets better. He lured two kids out there and he molested them, attacked them, and then killed them. And so they get to the end of this, right? And she's like, okay, well, great. You've confessed your sins, so you're good to go. Go on home. And he leaves. And, of course, Chloe is like, what the fuck? That's not okay. This man just confessed to killing two kids and raping them. And, of course, she's like, oh, don't worry. It's taken care of. He's been absolved by us.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, my God, what the shit? So then a few panels later, the guy goes home to his house, and he walks in, and there's voices coming from out from under his bed, and literal white monkeys crawl out from under it, and you learn later that he was found with his genitals ripped to shreds, and he himself was ripped to shreds. So I got to that, I kind of was enjoying the series, and I got to that, and, I was sitting on the train reading, and I literally, dropped my phone down into my lap and was like, oh my god. That is, it's one of the most horrifying things I've read. And there's another scene where they have, and I think I've mentioned this, that things that bother me in horror series are things that are normal but just off. So they have this guy, this demon possesses this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to Astrid, and then he's like, oh, you're looking at me funny. Is my face weird? I got an idea. What if we change it around? And the art, he grabs his, fish hooks both sides of his mouth, and he starts turning his face upside down. Yeah. And the art is so well done. It is so creepy. And then the next thing you know, he has this face that's, ripped and upside down. So he's talking through the eye holes. It is horrifying, and it's so good. I have no idea what's going on. Astrid, they've established she can see these demons, but no one else really can, except Chloe. Chloe can see them too, and so now it's going to kind of become this reluctant team-up to figure out what these things want. It is amazing. Larry made fun of me, and he's not wrong.
I don't like what you think about amazing. This is like... This is, seriously creeping me out here.
Oh, it's creepy. it is legitimately creepy. Like, it's one of the few series in a long time that I've gotten to the end and I was like, ugh. Like, ugh. Like, it's cool. It's a good shiver, but it was also like, ugh, that's not okay. Like, and
this is not okay. It's not okay.
This demon takes over one of her friends at one point, and he kind of looks at her, and one eye is like rolled all the way back, and his face is just slightly off, like, balance, and he has this huge toothy grin. That's kind of stuck with me for a while. Mm-hmm. And the demon himself talks kind of, he calls her Chloe Klim Klam, so he kind of talks in the sing-songy. So the way that he talks, he does stuff like that, like okey-dokey-doke, stuff like that. So it's almost this cutesy... Oh, the reason
okay,
I think
you know what? I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
Sorry. The reason I think it's demons, though, and this is interesting, one of her buddies, her sidekick now, is a demon who was exorcised. He had possessed a young girl, and they show him being in this young girl and being, you know, Linda Blair. But a priest exorcises him, and he says he's like, all the anger's gone. So no longer angry. And so now he wants to help. So that makes me think it is demons, because right. It's this idea of him having been cleansed. But at one point she says to him, she's like, I need you to get angry. And he's like, no, if I get angry, I'll always be angry again. And it's delightful. It's just so fantastic. So I'm in love with the series, but it is the 1, 2, 3, 4th series I'm currently reading dealing with demons. It's so hot right now.
I guess it's better than, you know, post-apocalyptic dystopian futures.
Jesus Christ. It's so true, the post-dystopian. Or what did I call that? Like, I can't remember what I called that now. But yes, the post-dystopian future. I can't help it. I think I just called it post-dystopian. I can't handle that shit anymore. So at least I'll take this. So that was really good. On that line, I also started reading another series called The Devil's Sons. Which, demons.
Wow.
So,
kind of in the name. What,
yeah. So one of my favorite video games of all time is the Dead Space series. 1 and 2. 3 is, we don't really talk about 3. But Tobuscus did an honest trailer for Dead Space 2, which is one of my favorite videos of all time. And he's talking about, like, he's singing along with the trailer. And at one point, he's like, demons, 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 demons! As all the necromorphs are coming out. And that's so, like, as I'm going through these series, I can just hear Tobuscus going, demons, 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 demons! And it's true! And I'm also introducing my daughter to the Constantine TV show, so I've just got it coming at me in all directions. The Devil's Sons, it's about this cult that, like a 70s cult, you know, like the hippies 70s cults that kind of popped up around. This guy was a literal devil worshiper, and he had sex with all of the women, because most of those cults that popped up in the 70s and they're really popular, I mean, outside of the big ones like Jim Jones and stuff, a lot of those guys... they really were sex-based, right? Mm-hmm. There's, what's the name of that guy who's in Utah who still has a cult right now? But, so, he had this, he had sex with all these women, so he has, like, 16 illegitimate children, and some of them carry a specific trait, one blue eye and one red eye. And he is currently, the cult leader is trying to find all of his children and sacrifice them for some unknown purpose. So in some ways, it's kind of... it's not great. Like, it hasn't blown my skirt up totally, where I'm just like, oh my god, this is so amazing. Yes, that would be him, Warren Jeffs. That's exactly him. And, but... so, they haven't really... it's not... it hasn't really become this, ooh, this is really awesome, this is so different. But it's definitely intriguing, and I'm still reading it because I want to know where it's going. But it is one of those series that I'm kind of worried that once they reveal what's going on, I might lose interest. So that one I'm cautiously optimistic on. Let's see, what else do I have really quick here? Eleanor and the Egret. There's a new series from Aftershock Comics called Eleanor and the Egret. It's written by Sam, I know, I always have called him Keith. I'm not sure if that's how you say his last name. It's K-I-E-T-H. But I was a huge fan of the Max when I was a teenager. I loved the comics. I loved the animated series. He was the primary, the principal artist on the Max. And he is on Eleanor and the Egret. And I just love his series. It's a series. It's only one issue, so there's really not a lot to say about it other than it's about a young woman who's an art thief, and she has a magical talking egret who helps her steal art. And I don't know why she's doing it. They exist in this world that seems to be between times. At one scene, she's in like this cut-off tank top and cut-off shorts and Ugg boots. So clearly very modern, and she's kind of like, you know, like talking like, oh my god, hey, how's it going? Like very modern, slangy. But then in other scenes, she's wearing the full high-collar Victorian dress and the big hat, and she has the parasol, and she's speaking very formally. And the inspector, there's an inspector who's looking, trying to catch the art thief, who talks and looks just like something out of an Arthur Conan Doyle story. So it's this kind of, it's this really neat ethereal, I was hooked. After one issue, I was like, oh my god, this strokes all of my happy parts. Especially because there's a talking bird. You generally have me at talking animals. So I liked that. Outcast, I'm not going to really say anything about Outcast because I'm really frustrated with Outcast right now. We're at the point now where I still don't know what we're dealing with. And I don't even know what an outcast is still. They haven't explained that. They don't need to come out there with the exposition fairies and just be like, let me explain all the things to you. But he does need to start feeding us some piecemeal information.
What volume are you on?
Issue 26?
Okay, just at the start of 20. That's way too long.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Let me pull up.
I'm just saying this way too long to not really have an explanation. Yes.
They've kind of given us like a... They gave us a very brief explanation.
Young Kenny X-Men ended at 20.
Exactly. Like, the fact that I still don't really understand who these people are, or they still haven't determined whether or not these are actual demons or if there's something else. And they haven't really, they've explained that the demons need, issue 26, they've explained that the demons need the outcast, that they created the outcast and they need him, but they haven't explained why. And in this issue, the only explanation they give is the dad is like, no, it's not our touch, it's our energy that draws them, but also scares them.
Sure.
Guys, I need a little more to go with on this. Like, I need more than this. So I've actually drawn a line in the sand that by the end of this arc, if I don't have a better grip of what we're dealing with, I'm out. I just can't.
You're gonna peace out.
Peace out. I've given it 26 issues, so I feel like I'm giving it the old college try, and I've been a fair sport here. The last thing I'll talk about is Paper Girls because I really feel like I should. Paper Girls. Last issue, I was kind of like, oh, God, they really need to start giving us some clues about take a note, outcast. In issue 12, I was like, okay, they got to start giving us some hints about what's going on here. Issue 13, sure as shit, they give us some hints. There's still a lot of unknowns and a lot of outstanding stuff, but they have given us some hints about what's going on, which is all I freaking needed. They've also established there is consistency. A few issues ago, the girls are in a shopping mall, and this time portal appears, and a field hockey stick comes through it. KJ. Her field hockey stick comes through with a message on it. They never have talked about that again, and this whole time I've been like, okay, well, if Cage sent it through, clearly there's another Cage running around. This episode, Aaron picks up the stick. They run into another time portal, and she's like, I know where this goes. I know exactly where this goes. She picks up the hockey stick, carves a message, chucks it through. And they show flashback to the panel of Erin herself reaching up to this time portal and the hockey stick coming through. So They've established a consistency in the world, which that's kind of all I really needed. Like, okay, there is logic to this. I like that. The biggest revelation here, though, is that I think I've mentioned the reason I like it is that it's that coming-of-age story with these girls who... I hate modern kids' movies with kids' characters in them because they're always these too smart for their age, omnipotent archetypes, right? The smart one, the sassy one, the tough one. And if you look back at like the Goonies and Monster Squad and a lot of those other ones, yeah, you had those characters, but they were still just kids, right? So they kind of broke out of those molds, and that's what Paper Girls has done a lot of. Two characters in particular, you have the wealthier character, Cage. She's definitely more conservative. She's a little more mature than the other girls. Mm-hmm. And she's currently partnered up with this girl named Mac. They got separated, and they're traveling together. Mac is the trailer park, white trash, tough-talking girl, right?
Right, right.
She's especially hostile to Cage. Especially hostile to her. She's kind of smart-ass with everybody and rude to everyone. But she's particularly... And I kind of thought it was a racist thing because Cage is Jewish, and she does call her a kike a lot, which I have to say, it's not as harsh as the N-word, but the first time I saw it on the paper, I was like, oh my god. Holy shit, they just use that word. Because it's just not a word you hear very often.
No, I don't know the last time I heard it.
That was kind of my reaction too, is I was like, oh my god, I forgot. People use this word. Why? Cage even called her on her once, like, why are you so hostile to me? But there's been this kind of evolution now that Cage, she now knows that Cage is on her period, right? And she was like, oh my god, that is so uncomfortable and weird. This issue, she's asking her questions about it, right? She's like, well, I didn't get to go to health class, so I don't really know what, I don't really know what's going on here. And Cage is like, oh my god, really? Like, there's a really humorously gross conversation in which she's like, how did you plug yourself? Cage is like, I had a clean handkerchief. Like, doesn't everybody carry one of those? It's really gross, but I'm having to do this. And later in the issue, Cage touches something and she sees these glimpses of the future. And unlike most times when they do that, when it's like clearly like, you're going to walk into a room and someone's going to come in and then this is going to happen and this is going to happen and you're going to do this. She gets just flashes. Oh. So like at one point somebody's like, should we do this? And it goes on, but she sees an image of her and Mac facing each other, holding hands and kissing. And I got to that, and I was like, oh my god, this explains so much about Mac. Why she's so hostile. Mm-hmm. She is this kind of trailer parky white trash girl. She hates anybody who's not her. She's 13. That's a rough time when you're still kind of trying to suss out the feelings you have, let alone if your feelings aren't, you know, within what we call, like, your family would call normal, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, you should be attracted to boys, but she's actually attracted to this girl, right? So it suddenly made so much sense. I was like, God, no wonder she's been so hostile to Cage.
Right.
It's her defense mechanism, right? And so I got to that part and was like, that's really nice. And, like, I feel like I just, again, they don't do those characters where, oh, she's the tough-talking white trash girl. That's all you need to know about her. Like, she's so much more complex than that. And it got me in the feels, like, in the Judy Blume feels. I think I mentioned when I was a kid, literally every girl I read, Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, and Forever. And those were two books that were very, very instrumental in my 12, 13-year-old development, right? And so, yeah, when I was reading this today, I was like, oh, man, that got me in the Judy Blume feels. Like, this is where that is. And so it made me happy. And that is all that I have read, plowing through it. It feels like so much. I mean, there's a couple other series, but nothing really worth mentioning. The Old Guard, I'm still not sure how I feel about that series. It's not, that's another one that's not really blowing my skirt up yet. We'll see. Mm. I won't be sorry to part with it.
Are they making a TV show out of that? Is that one of the ones?
No, I don't think that's the one. That actually should be a podcast topic. Spoiler alert for listeners. all tens of our listeners. That I would like to discuss that at some point, because good God, are there so many series right now that are going to become TV series or currently are series curious. Hey, Outcast, how's it going?
Oh, is that going to be? Is that a TV? Okay.
It is a series, yeah. And I have it already is, and I have a host of opinions on that one.
Okay. Well, we shall save that for
another podcast.
But for now, we're going to bring this one to a close with all of our lovely thoughts about Marvel and Hipster Island, with Jen's non-post-apocalyptic dystopian future.
That's comics. Right. It's all demons over here. Demons, 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 demons.
See, now I need to look up this trailer now. I don't think I've seen that one.
Dude, look for, it's Tobuscus Dead Space 2 literal trailer.
Literal trailer, and okay.
It's hilarious to me because at one point, like, he's singing, he's like, IGN approves. Because the IGN, like, it's amazing, goes through it. Ah, I love it. I love it. Choked by a demon, 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 demons. Yeah, you'll see what I mean, and you'll be like, oh, God. So, look right. It up, people.
I have to watch that before I go to bed. But anyway, thank you guys so much for checking out another of their Yelling About Comics podcast. You can find us on our website, yellingaboutcomics.com, where we have columns and we review comics. And aside to this actual podcast where we do yell about comics. And you also find us on Twitter. The site is at Yell About Comics, and Jen is at Jen Bozier, and I'm at Crunchy Chocobo, and we are also on Facebook as Yelling About Comics. And of course, as always, if there's any comic that you think that we should read, whether it's, you know, obviously come out to me if it's the superhero mainstream, and if you got something for Hipster Island Jen, I'm sure she's, unless it's a post-apocalyptic dystopian future.
Keep your post-dystopian shit to yourself, please.
She's open to suggestions. And I'll read any superhero suggestion. I mean, I've read shit that can't be worse than what I've already read. Like, don't say challenge accepted, any of you. I'll start doing research before I take your suggestions. But anyway, we will catch you guys in another 2 weeks. But for now, we will catch you later. Bye.
Later, haters.